vitriol.
Direct, experiential deconstruction of your belief system and your perceptions of reality. Now, your belief system and your perceptions of reality condition your feelings and your thoughts. And it conditions your actions. Okay, so what we're really looking at is the process of conditioning. So one of the ways that I could attempt to address these themes is perhaps, if you're interested, through the literal meditation practice itself, which is what we spend about an hour doing every Wednesday night. And you might do some more of this formal meditation practice on your own at any time of day or night. Whether you do or you don't, okay, the possibility in the meditation, and this isn't predicated or isn't dependent on duration of meditation. See, this is an idea that we have, like we need to meditate longer and deeper, more meditation. Again, the concept more is better. I need more meditation. I haven't meditated enough. Or sometimes it's, I'm not doing this right. And sometimes you might not be doing it as well as you could. You might be getting lost in the meditation. Okay? Because if you feel lost in life, then you're probably going to feel lost in the meditation. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not necessarily something that is a fundamental problem, depending on the kind of lostness that you experience. For example, when anybody feels lost in their environment, and we've all experienced this at times, we're looking for, I don't know, 62nd Avenue, and we forgot that the avenues and the streets and the things are lined up a certain way in Gainesville. It's actually pretty, like, clear the way somebody did it. But you get lost. The only place you're lost is in your mind. You don't get lost, really, on 62nd Street looking for 67th Ave. You get lost in your mind. So the purpose of the meditation is to deconstruct reality as you believe it exists. And this reality particularly refers to this I, me, my syndrome. And it's a syndrome. It's not listed in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual for Mental Disorders that psychiatrists use to diagnose people who have problems, but it is the fundamental problem, or opportunity, depending on how you look at it, for the human being. You see, until we can realize that whatever is perceived as a problem has a solution hidden within it, whether that's depression, anxiety, stress, ill health, until it's realized there is a solution, there is a pearl inside the rough shell of the so-called problem. We are then caught, until that's seen, we are caught in the conditioning of that shell. And to keep it a little bit still with the metaphor, it's the shell of ignorance. So one of the images that was given to me many, many years ago, and it just went just so deep, it just stuck, was that the human being is born much like the chicken embryo is born in the shell. At a certain point in the development, the shell cracks and that embryo comes out and is ready for the light, for the independence, for the freedom that comes with the cracking of the shell. That shell, for the human being, is the shell of ignorance. It's the shell of misunderstanding. It's the shell of cherished beliefs, opinions, perceptions, ideas. When I say cherished, I mean fixated upon, identified with. What gets deconstructed in the meditation is the tendency to identify with things. This is where stress comes from. This is where a lot of ill health comes from. This is where a lot of depressions come from and anxieties. Most people who are going to see a mental health professional on planet Earth right now, most, not all, most, are going because of some swing between anxiety and depression. That doesn't mean they're bipolar necessarily, in a clinical sense. But look at the mind. Look at the moods. Do they not swing between relatively comfortable or relatively happy or pleasant and relatively uncomfortable, unpleasant? I see some heads nodding. Okay. You don't have to go like this. And you don't have to nod your head. But if you're exempt from what I'm saying, once I'm done talking, we need to hear from you. Very much. Or like I often like to say, if this doesn't relate to you, then either this talk is off and it should stop, or you can give the talk. Fair enough? See, we didn't get to do, if we went to churches, we didn't get to do this. My birth father was a theologian. He also was a minister. You know, he was a real loose character. You know, he was really into having fun. So at one point, many, many years ago, he decided to do what he called people preaching, where he came down out of the pulpit and he took off the robe. I mean, he was like, wasn't going naked, but he took off the robe, he got down, and he started talking with people and getting them to interact. You know what happened? He got fired. They were like, what is this? He was like, that's okay. You're not ready for me. All right, I'm still going to do this. And he just moved on. He was like, it was okay. You know, it's all right. He wasn't identified with being in the robe. He wasn't identified with being in the pulpit. That's a powerful thing to be in. You ever been in one of those things? It's scary. It's like this thing, and all of a sudden you feel like you can do something. Like I'm up here, and I can talk, and I'm important, and I got the attention, and there's even a microphone, and they don't see my notes. And I don't like it myself. It's probably why I'm sitting here with you. So there's a tendency, and this is again where the stress comes from, the tendency is to fixate upon or identify with certain aspects of the experience. Now let's play with this. There's a continuum of experience which we can call life. Okay? And by the way, this just keeps going. I can only reach this far, but it's really like big. So it's very, very big. Okay? And sitting in this bigness, there's what you think of as you. That's this thing sitting right here. Anybody not have that perception? Now that's not an inherent problem. It doesn't have to be removed. But if this is all that you're identified with, then you are fixated upon this. What happens in the meditation is where there is fixation or identification, it comes up as stress. It comes up as a feeling of tension. It comes up as discomfort. It comes up as suffering. It comes up as unsatisfactoriness. And like a light beam, like a laser beam, the attention goes there. Okay? And it's like there, and it hangs out in that spot for a little while, and one could be coming back to the breathing, you know, and not getting too lost, and not getting too reactive. But then another spot comes up, and it goes over there. And there it is, like getting pulled around there a little bit. Then it goes up to these thoughts, and it starts doing this. And over here to the memory. All right, maybe it was over here. Okay, so it's over here to the memory, and then it's down to the feeling. Okay, anybody not having this experience when you meditate? Okay, if you fell asleep, that counts too as a place where you got fixated on, and you didn't know it. Okay, you got lost. See, awakening is inclusive of the sleeping experience and the dreaming experience and the waking state experience. It includes all of those. It must. And we have this thing called caring, don't we? Once you start to care about self or other or life or trees or the earth, or, you know, now the latest research The oceans are showing greater acidity. The green grass loves it, but the shellfish are dying. Evidence is pretty clear. It's going to increase if we don't do something, I guess. Vulnerability, change, transiency. So we get into something, right? We start to care about that something. This matters. And if we're not careful, that caring turns into anxiety. See, we're not anxious about anything we don't care about. Behind that anxiety that hurts, it hurts to be anxious. One could actually begin to feel, I'm caring too much about this. That's why it hurts. I'm caring too much. I'm caring too much about you. I'm caring too much about this. I'm worried. I'm fretting. I'm anxious. I'm stressed. And now it flipped. After my nap, I didn't feel better. Depression came on. The energy went down. It dissipated. What am I to do? I take another nap? Sooner or later, Pema Chodron's beautiful statement, short one-liner, gotta like it, the wisdom of no escape. Ah, the wisdom of no escape. I can't escape the truth, the reality, the way things really are. I can't escape that when I go on vacation. I can't escape that with more money. I can't escape that with more things. I can't escape that with more people who say, you're okay. I can't escape that with telling myself I'm okay. I can't escape that with therapy in most cases. I can't escape it with massage, acupuncture, good diet. I can't escape. Ah, the wisdom of no escape. What happens if the escape mentality falls away? Don't need to try to escape for a while, maybe. Maybe don't need to try to escape at all. Don't need to run away. Could open into, don't need to run towards anything either. Huh. Talked last week about the carrot that always seems to fall away. We're going for the carrot. Ah, I almost got disappeared. And another carrot. The ever-disappearing carrot act. What's your carrot? That's the fixation. I want this. I need this. Enlightenment concepts. Feelings of shakti or energy. I want this. I want to open. I want to expand. I want to feel myself as really big. Fixation. So the meditation, even if you're not doing it properly, even if you're getting lost, we sat for 55 minutes tonight and you were lost for 54, and 1 minute there was clarity about what was actually happening, you're still going to see where there's fixation and identification. You fall asleep tonight, you wake up in the morning, you're probably going to see, if you look, potentially where there's identification. What's the first mind moment? You got to be interested to see this. Some people don't catch the first mind moment. Say, what did you wake up on? I don't know. All I know is I was in bed, and next thing you know, I was sitting at the table having coffee. How'd that happen? I know people who have 3 alarm clocks, and they can't wake up. 3 alarm clocks, and they set them all off at once. I said, how close are they to your head? I bring them in real close. I have them go off in unison. A friend of mine had one of these things. It's like taps, not taps. It's that thing they do in the army. Yeah. And it's like this person alarm clock, and it's like a little plastic alarm clock, and it does that really, really loud. It's like, it's painfully loud, right? And then the guy finishes that, and he says, get up! Wow. somebody's making that. Somebody's spending their time thinking about that, making it, and selling it to people like you and me. People like you and me. Guess what? That's everybody. So you can't help, once you're touched by the conditioning of existence, you can't help but care. But sometimes your caring really takes these spins. Care too much, maybe you feel like you care too little. I'm not interested enough, I'm disengaged, I'm bored. What's the point? This isn't working. Maybe I need an adjustment, a tune-up. I'm overly engaged. I'm overly invested. So it's like, what the heck does balance mean? And what you begin to find is that balance isn't a point. Balance is a process. It's something that emerges in the continuum. When I use the word continuum, it's not this thing. It's big, round, 360 thing without edges, okay? That continuum of life. Balance starts to emerge. And so the states of mind, the feelings, the moods, the boundaries start to initially show as, wow, I, as I perceive myself, am really hurting. Now maybe I'm not in fundamental trouble, but I'm willing to admit finally I'm not perfect. I'm actually more accurately screwed up. Wow. There's a bundle about me. Right? There's a configuration, there's an aggregateness about me. There's a contractedness, and the wisdom of no escape is operating right now in the storyline. The wisdom of no escape, so you don't try to escape that. And meditation is a perfect, perfect, ideal activity to reveal the fixations, the identifications, and ever so naturally and safely show those fixations and identifications as part of the shell of ignorance that's surrounding your, if I can use that word, unlimited potential. That's what we actually are. That's what the universe actually is. It's unlimited potential that's actually somewhat aggregated, right? Even to the point where it seems inert. You know what that's like? When you say to somebody, I'm stuck. Okay, now you're experiencing the law of inertia for a little while. It doesn't last, does it? I am stuck. I'm really stuck. Ever feel that? Ever feel really stuck in a state, in a feeling, in a dynamic? Again, if you're exempt from this, you must talk when I'm done. No, you don't. That'd be another fixation. The talker is now fixated on, you must talk. No. So the states, the feelings, and of course the sensations, and of course the breathing, and of course everything else that you could possibly call you, or not you. You see, there's another perceptual process. You and not you. Right? And the you is usually in here, and the not you is out there. What happens in the meditation? Sometimes just by closing the eyes, the line between the you and the not you gets a little bit fuzzy. It gets a little more vague. It's a little less distinct. Just a little. Or a lot. Again, the real issue for the human is fixation, is identification. And I would suggest to you, I would put before you, this is the fundamental cause for dis-ease, mental, emotional, and physical. Good news is that sometimes, not for everyone, but for sometimes, the meditation itself, without doing heavy-duty cardiovascular stuff, you know, or really cleaning up the diet, people get physically healthy, the body, excuse me, gets physically more healthy when people meditate and discover those fixational points and begin to let them be revealed. And what happens when they're revealed, when they're seen for what they are and not interfered with, they let go in their own time. You don't make that happen. It just happens. That's great news. Just like you are not going to make yourself into a liberated being, you are not going to release fixations. Fixations are going to release in their own time. And so in the teachings of the East, these are called sankharas. Right? Most of these sensations and tensions and fixations that come up inside this thing when you're meditating are, I don't want to say all, but a lot of them are impressions from past actions. They're called samskaras in Sanskrit, or in Pali, they're called sankharas. Sankharas. So what that means is that most of the time when you're feeling some distress inside of here, this is a coagulated spot or area of life energy that's gotten fixated, that's gotten configured, that's gotten twisted, that's gotten contracted. That's why it hurts. Okay, but what's really important, again, in the wisdom of no escape, is there's a fundamental difference between experiencing suffering that leads to more suffering and experiencing suffering that leads to freedom from suffering. Like I said, we were talking about desire last week, that point about desire. We feel or believe, invest in, that we become happier when our desire is fulfilled. I got my thing, I got my this, I got my that. I got rid of that, I got rid of that. What's actually happening is we're relieved of the suffering, partly now, of that particle of the shell of ignorance, because desire has fallen away. Not because you got what you wanted. That's a turn in terms of the wisdom of no escape. So the meditation, if you're focusing on the breathing, let's say, as a what's called primary object, most people have about max 10 seconds of uninterrupted relative focus on breathing before something comes up. If that's sustained for 20, if you actually are having 20 seconds of uninterrupted absorption on the breathing, you're starting to go into an absorptive state. Okay, you're having a very different meditation than what a lot of people have. Most people, and it's hard to even know how many seconds go by. If I ask you, how many seconds went by, if you were on the breathing, how many seconds went by before something came up and pulled the attention off? You'd probably be guessing at the answer. The reason why I know this is because I had a teacher who made me look at this. I mean, he didn't make me. He just said, this is what you're here for, so do this. Does that sound like to you, like he's making me? And I saw what it actually was like to try to see how much attention is on the breathing before it pulled off. So what happens then is what needs to come up, what's ready to come up, what's ready to ripen, what's ready to be revealed, what's ready to show its true nature, what's ready to pop, what's ripe, as Shakespeare said, what's ripe, comes up spontaneously. The meditative response, the care, the wisdom, the compassion, is to not interfere with it. Don't get in and monkey with it. Easier said than done, yes?
Okay, just between you and me, how many of you are monkeying around in there with your experience? I can't tell by looking at your face, but you know for sure, don't you? So just admit it. If you are monkeying with your experience, just say yes later to yourself. You don't have to say it here to anybody. So there again, we can't seemingly really let it be. We got to get in and do something with it. Why? Because we're trying to fix ourselves. I don't even know what I am, who I am. I'm guessing at it. But I'm going to try to fix me nonetheless. I love to ask you what you're focusing on and interested in, because it so often just goes right to what was happening in the meditation. So I was thinking about stress. When I wasn't on the breath, I was monkeying around thinking about stress. And I was thinking that, this happened tonight, I was thinking that a lot of the processes that are taught in the name of self-improvement, self-awareness, self-actualization, self-knowledge, self, are born from a fundamental, radical misunderstanding. So we go with one of those methodologies, and it's fine. You can go with anything, right? Isn't that part of being free? You can go with whatever you want to go with, within limits. So you go with a method of self-improvement. You've already bought the idea that you exist. Now you're going to improve yourself and exist better. And you're going to have the criteria for that, which means there's going to be less of this and more of that. And a lot more of that, and maybe none of that. Okay, that one's going to go away. There's not going to be any fear. It's going to be lots of love, joy. I get what I want. Within reason, I'm not hoarding. It's like trying to go up in an airplane into a cloud and then make the cloud the way you want it. For thousands of years on planet Earth, it has been clear to those who have little dust in their eyes that there is no self to improve. There is no I, me, my syndrome that's going to improve itself into a better I, me, my syndrome. Yet there's a very powerful dream state illusion, spellbound as it may be by the shell of ignorance, that I am going to improve myself, better myself, and I'm going to do that with others too. That's right, and they can be of a different political affiliation and religious affiliation. And because we're cross-culture, their skin can be a different color. It's really where we're at, baby. This is the forward edge of it. Get with it. I remember going to graduate school in California, and they were so big on this multiculturalism, like it was so important to them. And I felt like this is sort of a dream. I mean, that's already natural. Why are we making a big deal about it? As if it was the new rage to be multicultural. We're a multicultural educational institute. Well, because others aren't. So now we're reacting to that. It's the perception of me over here inside this that has the anxiety, the depression, the health or the ill health. And we can stop, and if not stop, we can just pause. You know, there's a pause button on that recorder. There's also a stop button. They're different, but they're close to one another usually, aren't they? Somebody put them fairly close to one another, as I remember, on the old tape recorders. Push the pause button, if not the stop button, on this progressive investment in these very agreed upon sacred cows of betterment, of evolving to something that's going to be fundamentally better, different than where we are. What the meditation does is it spontaneously, whether you like it or not, puts the brakes on this conditioning, this samsaric wandering. That's what the Buddha called it, samsaric wandering. Wandering in samsara. What is samsara? Perpetual, habitual. Looking, seeking, wanting, not wanting, changing. And if we get something, then let's not change this. Somebody described for me today a beautiful experience of feeling really, really good and just wanting to kind of keep it. And then the disappointment as it slipped away. The more you want it, grasp it, hold it, the stronger the disappointment when it slips away. And it's all slipping away, isn't it? So what happens, what we understand intellectually, okay, we know that this is going to stop breathing. We know, as Don Juan said to Carlos Castaneda, death is always over the left shoulder. We know this intellectually. What happens is that knowing, that intellectual sense or understanding that actually has also been conditioned into our mind, but not just conditioned into our mind, because there's a part of our mind that really is aligned to the truth of the way things are. Your mind is not just fickle. Your thoughts are not just fickle. Your perceptions are not just screwed up. Truth in the form of perception, truth in the form of thought, truth in the form of feeling, and I mean the truth of the way things are, the liberating truth of the way things are, is hidden. Yeah? It's the solution inside the so-called problems of the tension, of the disease, of the depression, the stress. It's hidden there. It's the pearl, as the Sufis say, beyond price. It's priceless. So we could hear this, and if we're not already interested, we could begin to look. Because this has to be seen, as the Buddha said, in the very, very sort of essence of the teachings. E pasiko means come and see for yourself. Come and see for yourself. Okay, take not my word for this. Take not someone else's word. Take not a scriptural word for this. Take not a doctrine. Take not a dogma. Then he finished it off. Boy, did he finish it off. Take the truth itself as your refuge. Take no external refuge. Ageless, priceless, transcendent teachings. How do you do it? How do you take the truth as your refuge? Because even some so-called Buddhists are busy taking refuge and investing in believing that this will make them a better Buddhist. See, the Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. People tried to make him into a Buddhist. People have tried to make me into a Buddhist. It didn't work. They say, well, you must be a Buddhist, you're teaching these things. I said, who said so? They said so. Now, if I needed to be a Buddhist for a while, then I'd be a Buddhist. That's what we do. What we need to do, we pick it up for a while. Have you noticed that? Some of us need a skateboard. You know, some of us need to, you know, eat tofu regularly for a while. And some of us need to eat the turkey. And some of us need to exercise. And they do it like that. And you notice how it keeps changing? Has there been anything from the moment you became self-aware, so to speak, like, I exist, that sort of perception, where you didn't have something that you got invested in also fall away? Sometimes it goes away so fast, like with the mantra that I learned. I was, like, so excited to learn how to meditate through a mantra. And I was completely naive and romantic about it, and the person said, yes, and don't say this to anyone else. And I was paying $60 of my hard-earned money from the grocery store, $60 for my mantra. And they said, it's sacred. It's a bij mantra, it's a seed mantra. And these are different than any other kind of mantras. I found out years later that tons of other people got my mantra as well. A lot of people got that seed mantra. But it worked, because I was available to be brought into a trance called meditating with a mantra. And then I got exposed to the breath meditation. Somebody said, if you want to, just watch your breath. Just pay attention to your breath. See if you can notice where it is in the body. Okay, don't interfere with it. Okay. Don't try to breathe any particular way. These words started coming to me from this person who had some experience talking about this. And so I was like sitting there just trying it out. Quicker than that, all the interest that had been there for like 2 or 3 years in this mantra, daily interest, daily, like this is cool, just fell away. And I, as I perceived myself, I couldn't get it to come back. I couldn't say, well, give me the mantra again. It's like it just dissolved. Little did I know, as I was experiencing, I, as I perceived myself, was experiencing the third noble truth, the truth of cessation, the truth of dissipation. In the truth of cessation, in the truth of dissipation, is the truth of emancipation. Emancipation is the falling away of identification with form. And when there's a falling away of identification with form, all forms now, mental forms, physical forms, emotional forms, behavioral forms, guess what? The form gets to continue with that much more what? Liveliness. Ignorance complicates everything. Misunderstanding complicates everything. Dissipation, cessation, is emancipation. So we care about not just ourselves in these ways that we're discussing, perhaps, but we care about other people and we want to help them. Right there, okay, we are vulnerable to the misunderstanding born from the conditioning that there's somebody over there and there's somebody over here and I'm going to help that somebody over there with my whatevers. Again, the most fundamental and radical health and liberation is that nothing needs to be healed. I know it sounds a little bit like heretical. It sounds a little bit like criminal even to some. Nothing needs to be healed. But just to sit here or stand here or be here and say that doesn't make it true, does it? Because if I believe that there's something that's not okay, that something needs to be changed, something needs to be healed, something needs to be different, then that's what I'll be working on. That's what I'll be going for. And how much of psychology, sociology, economics, politics, religion, and any other ology you can think of, how much of it is predicated on this that I am discussing, this view? And I'm not saying evolution should be denied. In fact, I wish they taught it in school when I was in school, more openly. Like, get Darwin up on the podium. Really look at what he focused on. Listen to his wisdom. Try to look deeply. I just bypassed it. So the conditioning came in. There's a better, there's a worse. There's a higher, there's a lower. There's an inside, there's an outside. There's a self that can and must try to evolve to a better place. Couldn't hear anything else because there was nothing else to hear. So I must listen. And does anybody know what they're talking about? I finally asked myself. Does anybody know what they're really talking about? And it wasn't until somebody came along and said, pay attention to your breathing if you want to. And boom. I couldn't not pay attention. It became so fully engaging to actually feel this life force. And it was very conflicted for a long time, very conflicted. Just mantras you do right up here, and it sort of feels good and it trickles down. And I'm not bashing mantra meditation, it's beautiful. Not bashing any kind of meditation. I'm just saying that if you pay attention to the breathing, you actually pay attention and let the breath, let that organic, spontaneous revelation of breathing, that no-selfness of breath. See, the whole teaching is that right there in the breathing. And we'll maybe next week or the week after, we'll do the Anapanasati Sutta. We'll at least start it. Might take us up to 7 weeks to get through that too. Okay, that's the Buddha's other teaching on meditation, other than the Satipatthana Sutta, was the Anapanasati Sutta. That's the sutra on mindfulness of breathing. The whole teaching of Dharma, the whole teaching is in that sutra. It's so fantastic. He went right from that basic fundamental fact of life, there's this breath, and made it so clear that everything about the nature of what you really are and aren't can come clear through this practice. So we get to see that our actions are very, very important. That our actions are actually having consequences. And I'm not just talking about our outer actions. I'm talking about the inner actions of mind. The thoughts, the perceptions, the intentions. How about that? The intentions. You see, we're invested in the belief that we're doing something, like I am moving my hand. We say this very easily. I just moved it out like this and I am speaking. Or I am listening, or I am sitting in this room. Guess what that is? There is a interwoven, you might say, series of processes, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, consciousness, body. And there's this thing called intention or volition. And the human being, many human beings, are fixated on intention as this is where the I is. I am the one who thought of that. I am the one who made that happen. I am the one who moved that hand. I am the one. And actually all that's happening there is an identification with intention or volition. And what I can describe that as is the about to moment before anything happens. So what happens in meditation for some people, if they take the instruction of relaxing into the stillness, which is one that I often invite, relax into the stillness, let the body become completely still, don't interfere with it in any way, let it completely become still, which actually is quite a practice. I had a fellow that came for about 3 years to retreats, and I finally asked him, I mean, I like you, and you seem to like this scene, but why are you really coming? And you know what he said to me? It was very interesting. He said, when I observed you when I first came here, I could see that you knew how to sit still, and I wanted to learn how to do that. I said, is that it? He said, yeah. I said, you got it yet? He said, almost. I'll need a couple more retreats. A couple more retreats happened, and he disappeared. I never heard from him again. So what? And I'm going to go the other way. So what? You learn how to sit still. You could still be completely identified with yourself as now someone who knows how to sit still. All you did was take the conditioning that's been running you around and getting you to believe that you're the one that did all these things, when all it was intention or impulse that preceded the action of speaking or moving the body. And now you've like let that sort of dissipate, and now there's a stillness. So you became peaceful. Nothing wrong with it. Do you, do I, do we want to see the truth truly? Or do we want to have yet another state that we're going to hang out in or believe we are for a while, like another experience that we're going to collect and put in a little mantle with a little sort of thing around it? Yes, now I've become a still being. See, unfortunately, any place where the mind or somebody suggests to you, there's your pedestal, go there. The truth of cessation, the truth of dissipation as emancipation will take that apart. Does that mean there's no resting place? Does that mean there's no home? Does that mean we're subjected? We must be helplessly forever, forever, perpetually wandering? Why don't we just go to that forever word rather than just saying for a lifetime? I don't know about you, but when I first heard about purgatory, I didn't want to go there. But then I realized that I actually already was there. It just didn't sound quite as bad as some of the horrific descriptions that were given. If I effed up more, I would be at risk of having that experience. So I decided to try not to do that. But realizing you actually are in the bind of conditioning has the pearl right there of the unconditioned. That's why samsara, perpetual wandering, is liberation in disguise. This non-interfering possibility, this realization that you can't help but care, this realization that in terms of your personality structure, every other person that's walking around is the mirror to see where is their fixation, where is their holding. You can still look in the bathroom mirror, see what you see, but look into the eyes of other beings and notice that this inner so-called world keeps changing every time you look at a different person. It just keeps moving. Where's their fixation? And then it loosens all up, maybe. Everything becomes placid, smooth, even. The anxiety goes away, the depression goes away. Feel really healthy. Wow, I'm really healthy now. My belly has never been so relaxed. All that tension in the back of the neck is gone. My ears feel red. I mean, all this stuff happens, and it's just unfolding phenomena. There's nothing there that lasts. And if it's clung on to, there's the unsatisfactoriness. There's the unhappiness. There's the friction once again, clinging to the open, peaceful, tranquil, even sense of yourself. So, you can be interested in deconstructing things that are very obviously impediments to your happiness. If you see you have a habit, for example, of doing something, and you can fill in what that might be. It might be related to food, it might be related to distraction, it might be related to your self-image. You have a habit, okay, and you see that, and you want that to change. So you work at it in one way or another. You try to look into that. You ask for help. You invite people who you trust to come into that space with you and look at that with you. And they help you and you loosen that. And you feel a little better. You feel a little relieved. Or maybe you feel a lot relieved. You feel like you really let go of something. Life seems to flow a little bit better. Feel a little healthier or a lot healthier. That's fine. Fine. Let's not confuse that with what it means to really wake up. These are not contradictory. You can have relative improvement in areas of so-called self. Just recognize that what you call a self is just a process of elements unfolding, this becoming that, that becoming this. Emptiness, okay, actually is the truth. It's the abiding truth that all form actually is sitting in. And more, even more intimate than that, all forms are emptiness. What does that mean? Very difficult to understand with the mind. All forms are emptiness. Just as perpetual wandering is liberation in disguise. It's the wisdom of no escape at the most subtle, intimate, and complete point. Emptiness, as Nagarjuna said, the great Indian saint, emptiness makes all things possible. When fixation dissipates, when holding dissipates, not only do the surface stresses sometimes fall away, but it becomes clear that when there isn't an investment in the form, whatever the form is, when there isn't a fixing upon the form, when there isn't a resisting of the form, when the form is just as it is, like the flower. Who would interfere with a flower that's blossoming? Who would need to change it or control it or make it different? Oh, that color's not right. Oh, that petal went that way instead of that way. Oh, it should have happened yesterday. It's kind of like me in a hopefully sort of just fun way saying, maybe the azaleas can go on forever. Well, they can't. They won't. They don't give a hoot about what I want. They're just doing themselves. What happens is what you call yourself gets revealed as it's just doing itself. It's just being itself. And you begin to get a sense of what emptiness is. Emptiness of a sense of fixation, emptiness of a sense of holding. It's very much there, often obscured, in the falling away, the so-called letting go experience that no one does. It just happens. Emptiness is revealing itself. Only very quickly sometimes we stay in there, invested and interfering, and say, I just let go. I just let go. I've been holding that, and now I let it go. I feel better. And if somebody says, what just happened to you? You look better. You're smiling. Oh, I let go. I let go of my anger. I let go of my sadness. I let go of my anxiety. I let go of my depression. I let go. And everybody goes, great. You let go. Let's all let go together. So everybody's going to let go. Now we're letting go and feeling better because we let go. What a dream. In an instant, without being a jerk and telling everybody they're wrong, because that's not really nice, somebody might say, wait a minute, who's letting go? Where is the one who's letting go? And this isn't to say that believing that you just let go and feeling some tension go away doesn't feel good. It feels great. The truth of cessation is happening there. Only thing is that truth of cessation is happening, you might believe that it's happening to you. the truth of cessation just happened to me. I mean, I think so. And you'll get some other people who will say to you, sometimes with good intention, they'll say, yes, it happened to you. Keep going. See if more good things can happen to you. Try this now, try that now. Somebody might come along, it could be somebody like me, who says, wait a minute, stop. Or if you can't stop, just pause. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? What do you expect to get? Just let's pause and do a kind of a serious, loving, compassionate check-in. Let's check in. Or check out. What's going on here? Because if we're not careful, we just take whatever conditioning, tendency to identify and fixate, we were sort of born into and had reinforced by countless others along the way, and we just transfer it over and we start meditating with that same conditioning going on. We start working on self-improvement with that same conditioning going on. We start working on health and a better body with that same conditioning going on. And we stop for a little while, maybe thinking about, I'm going to just croak any day now, and I don't know when. And I don't even know what that is. But I can't deny it. The azaleas croaked, and I am going to croak too. But I'll just sort of keep that as a thought. I'll keep it on the shelf. It's going to happen later. It's morbid. Don't think about that. Or, it's not my concern. I'm busy living. See, I said it last week. It bears mention again. Everyone, no matter what their condition, good, bad, ugly, everywhere in between, every single day, and even more microscopic than every single day, every single moment, is experiencing existential loss. See, the existentialists were right when they said, human beings are concerned with meaning, anxiety, freedom, and suffering. Problem for me with the existential philosophers is they didn't penetrate and reveal and maybe know for themselves what does transcendence actually mean. But they gave a very good, for me at least, very good description and recipe for some of the problems. Until it's clear that existential loss, you could call it dying, is happening every day in the thoughts, in the feelings, in the perceptions, in the breathing, in the azaleas. Until that's clear, one cannot realize that living and dying are actually one and the same. They're not two separate things. What do I mean by that? In the meditation, you get to see there's the in-breath, in, out. There's the out-breath. And that same clarity, it's coming, it's going. No one's doing it, it's just happening. Moves right into the whole body. Moves right into the whole feeling life. Moves right into the whole mental life. That truth of impermanence, that truth of change, it just gets so clear. Nothing is exempt. The consequence of that is that the clinging and the grasping and the fixating dissipates. When that truth of change becomes crystal clear, there are moments where there's absolutely no clinging at all. But subtly behind that, so to speak, can be the idea, ha ha, now I'm not clinging. I'm not clinging. I figured out how to not cling. The only thing is, I am still in the shell of ignorance because I am clinging to the I that's not clinging. Yes. Sounds kooky. But that's often how it works. And then with the actions, okay? The emptiness that's manifesting as form shows up in the actions. And this is what the Bhagavad Gita has at its very core. If you study the Bhagavad Gita, which is the heart, it's the heart of hearts for many Hindus. and you really get in there, it's the same teachings on emptiness that the Buddha gave. Actions without an actor. Doings without a doer. And he just brought it out, the Buddha did at least, brought it out in so many different places. See, Arjuna's big battle on the battlefield was, how can I kill and not be in wrong action? What a very interesting double bind. Potentially to not kill could mean being killed. To kill would mean now I'm the killer and I've killed someone else. What St. Paul did in his meditation. Why do I want to do what I shouldn't, then not want to do what I should? Oh Lord, who can deliver me from this bondage? He had his own existential, perhaps for moments and maybe minutes and maybe years, unrelenting double bind. And where is the liberation in that samsara? Where is it? It's right there in it. Actions without an actor, doings without a doer. Being, yet no one who's being. See, that's what's happening in this room right now. There's being happening. There's no one who's being. Toes being toes. Fingers being fingers. Laugh being laugh. Nod being nod. Scratching being scratching. The wall is walling. The floor is flooring. The fan is fanning. Paul is pawing. Laughing is laughing. Being, yet no one being. I've completely lost track of time. How are we?
9:04.
9:04. Let me stop here.